Good morning. It's an honor for me to be here. I really appreciate you inviting me, and I look forward to this. Can you hear me? Yes?
Yeah, it's good.
Look forward to this week that we're going to be spending together. So this series is going to be on Vacation to Paradise, and during this week, we will go through a few sermons that will help us understand the journey that we have here on earth and the challenges that we are facing here on earth as we are on this path to being in heaven one day. So in the first lesson that we're going to cover this morning, I entitled it, "This World is Not My Home." So certainly we know that on this world right now on earth, we are, you can count it a vacation in a foreign land, because this certainly is not our home. In 1 Peter chapter 1, Peter reminds us that we are strangers in this world. Certainly we don't belong here. This is not our home. We were reborn to live somewhere else, that is in heaven. So the challenge with that is that if we don't remember that this is not our home, things can get very frustrated. We can get very frustrated in this world if we don't realize that this is not what we are meant for, built for, to live here on earth. It's taking me a little bit to kind of get myself oriented to this building, but I have next an illustration about a lady that called her travel agent, and she was very confused about how is it possible to go from to leave Detroit at 8:20 and then land in Chicago at 8:33. It's just not possible, and the travel agent tried to explain to her how the time zone works, and was having a very hard time. And eventually, she said, "You know, the plane goes very, very fast." And then she understood. So sometimes when we are in travel somewhere, it can be very frustrating. I don't know how it is with you, but some people say that it's not about the destination; it's the journey. You've heard that before, and it's just something that people say, but in reality, I don't know how many times you've been on a plane to go somewhere and you just can't wait for the journey. Lisa took our daughter to Florida College, and like 5 days she was on the road and she didn't love it so much. So it's the journey is there, and as we are on this path to heaven, we have to deal with the journey, but the journey is not going to be something that is the most pleasurable. You're looking to get to the destination, and that's really what's important. And as long as we see our destination, that really helps us put things in perspective and not get too bogged down on the journey. So going on vacation, as I mentioned, can certainly be pleasurable to know that you're going to go somewhere, to know that you're looking forward to getting there. And certainly for all of us Christians, the idea of getting to heaven, it's an extraordinary thing to look forward to, right? However, as long as, again, you know where you're going and what you expect when you get there and what you expect on the journey. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11 says, "Dear brothers, you are only visitors here. Since your real home is in heaven, I beg you to keep away from the evil pleasures of this world. They are not for you, for they fight against your very soul." Paul also wrote in Romans chapter 12 that we are not to conform to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind, that you may prove that which is good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So Peter, Paul, they have the same message. So really, if it's true that God doesn't want us to conform to this world, God doesn't want us to love this world, if it's true that we are aliens and strangers, question is, why do we want to be so connected to this world? Because it's still hard to not be connected to this world. And that really is because the earth is all that we know. If we are like Paul and we have been taken into heaven and getting a taste, sometimes I wish that would happen to us, because then you really know what heaven is like and you can say, okay, forget everything that's here, I know where I'm going. But how can you imagine what heaven is like if we've never been there before? You don't know what to expect, and yeah, you read about it, but I have a illustration. My wife is gonna get a kick out of this because when I married my wife 22 years ago, she had two ferrets. And these ferrets, Junior and Scotchy, they're a lot of fun, love to run all over the house. They didn't smell very good, but so they love to hide food in different places of the house. Sometimes you bump into different, like, what in the world is this? Oh, they just hid their food there. They forget about it. And Lisa would feed, sometimes you have to feed them manually, or sometimes they get hungry. I think that was when you were giving them some antibiotics or something. But so sometimes they would get sick. That's Lisa 22 years ago. They would get sick, and that's me giving them some antibiotics that we put together. And they love to play, and they love to follow us all over the house. And it was a great pet. But this pet lived in a cage in my basement, because it was initially in a bedroom, but that bedroom, you could not go in. It was so sticky. It's okay. So lived in a cage. So these were pets you would expect. Okay, you know, of course they live in a cage. We fed him food, just little pellets, right? Give him water from a little bottle. Not what they normally do, and they're wild. I always was a little concerned that one day he would sneak out and get outside, kind of like the same way that Brent and Tamara, they have a cat and they're afraid that he'll go outside because they wouldn't survive probably much in the wild, right? So the same thing with my ferrets. I was afraid that they were going to go outside and then get run over by a car or something. And they'll probably die. And that is because those ferrets are no longer wild. They were domesticated. And these ferrets, they have gotten so used to being in our house that they forgot what it was to be really themselves living in the world that they were supposed to live. So he had gotten used to being in our house, and you certainly could say that they had become conformed to our world, and they didn't mind it so much. Right? So they had food, they had everything they needed, so they're no longer in the environment that they are meant for. And when Jesus saves us, Jesus does the same thing with us. Jesus gets them out of our cage. We are in a cage when we are in this world, trapped in sin, just like reminds me of those rats, I was going to say, of those ferrets. And that's what we are doing so often. We are caught in this world, and whether you are in a job, for instance, that is hard for you to get out of, or you are in an environment and this world, caught up in circumstances in this world, you are really trapped. We could be trapped in a cage. So Jesus called us out of our cage called the sin and this world, and he called us to live a life that's different than the life of people of the world, and that is a life that is free of sin. Jesus is saying to us pretty much, don't be domesticated to this world. You're going to this world, but don't be domesticated. This world, if we're not careful, so slowly can get us to just be like the world. And Jesus says, don't let the world do that to you. Don't conform to this world. Don't fall in love with the world. Don't let this world cage you and enslave you while you are on this journey. So Jesus says that the security and the comfort that this world seems to offer is deceitful. And we shouldn't allow ourselves to get so comfortable, to get so at ease with what's going on around us, because we are really in a cage. I don't know if those ferrets knew that they were in a cage, but ferrets are not meant to be in a cage. I was looking, I am glad that Brent and Tamara, they are pet lovers and they have pets too, and we also have pets at home. And they love to be outside, but we keep them in the house, all kinds of reason, and we think we know better. For those of you that are animal lovers, we have so many animals, like 12, like a small petting zoo, and four cats, all of them inside the house, and they just wanna go outside. They just wanna go outside constantly. As soon as there's over, they just go outside. And we, people, very much caged, and seem like so often, we're just comfortable to be caged. The world is comfortable to be caged. They don't know they're caged. But Jesus has saved us to not be caged, to be free, and to be outside of that cage that enslaves us. So in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." So Jesus is saying, don't store up treasures on earth. It's a trap, it's a cage, it will enslave you. It will enslave you. And I, you know, the closest example that I can give is in corporate America. It's so easy to be enslaved. Long time ago, there was slavery, right? And then you're really trapped if you're a slave. And then there's many parallels that could be drawn between being a slave and being having a job. I mean, believe it or not, we think we are free, but you go through the job and the boss tells you what to do. They tell you when to go to the bathroom. They tell you when to take a break. They tell you everything, and you better be there. And for whatever time you give them, because they pay you for your time, you have to do what they say. Think like what they say, and your opinion should be suppressed, right? You very careful what you say, how you say it. And the bad thing about it is that they pay you, right? And then you say, okay, I want to quit my job. I want to just fire my boss. But then you think, okay, what about the insurance? What about who's going to pay my bills, right? And then you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut and stay here, trapped in a cage, right? Just one association, one application, but you know, one can be trapped in sin because of various circumstances. And Jesus says, get out of that state, because it will indeed in control you. So the first point in today's lesson is, be free, don't be in a cage. As you are on this journey, don't stay in a cage. Jesus came to set you free, and you are not to be bound to a cage. So a lot of people, including many Christians, do lay up treasures for themselves on earth. And when I say treasures on earth, I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't work to provide for your family, okay? One should work. Treasures on earth is not food in the fridge, okay? It's very important. Treasures on earth is not money in the bank so you can pay for your utilities, right? We understand that. Or things to provide for your family. One has to work, right? So I'm not suggesting that one doesn't work. But there is an extent to which one goes so far out, and it becomes all about accumulation as opposed to just, you get to where you live a life comfortably, but then at one point you say, okay, enough is enough. Now I'm just gonna focus more on putting treasures in heaven as opposed to treasures here on earth. So the problem, it isn't so much what we have, right? That we have those things, is that we get to feel that we have to have those things in order to be happy. I have a quote here, you probably heard. It says that a luxury once enjoyed becomes a necessity. And it's so hard sometimes to just, it's so easy for something to, for your standards of living to go up and up and up and up and up, right? When I first came in this country, in my country, in Romania, we hardly ever had air conditioning. The first time that I was exposed to air conditioning when Tamara and Brent were there in the 90s, is like, get some fans on. Don't you have air conditioning? Like, what is air conditioning? And then I realized that actually you can just put a device and then it cools off the air. And then it's so wonderful. Now you can be without it, right? And then all of a sudden it's a necessity. Yet there's so many countries in the world that they are just fine without air conditioning, right? We think we're gonna die. When we had a few cats and we left them outside and they were panting all day long, and my wife, honey, they're gonna die. Honey, they're not gonna die, okay? And the lady we got the cats from, and by the way, we live in the desert, 120 degrees, very hot. Honey, they're gonna die. My wife brings the cage in the house. Honey, it's okay, they're gonna be fine. panting, it's like they're gonna die. No, they're not gonna die. My wife will go put them ice there. They're gonna be just fine. What would cats do before air conditioning? But yes, just keep that in mind. You experience a luxury, then all of a sudden it's a necessity. So you can make a necessity yourself. So those necessities, the challenges that, and the debt that they demand, it becomes their cage to where you have to do certain things in order to maintain those luxuries that you set up for yourself, and they do become caging you if we're not careful. Jesus says, don't allow for that. So while on vacation on this earth, as I mentioned, we ought to live differently than the people of the world. You may see people of the world running around constantly and really being in cage, but we need to live free. Second point in today's lesson is that we are not to intermingle the Holy Seed with the people of the land. As we are going in this, on this journey on this land, it's very important to, of course we are going to connect with others and talk to other people and have friendships with individual people in the world, but it's very important to not allow them to influence us so we become like them. If you remember, when the people of, when the Jews crossed into the promised land, what did God tell them to do first of all? First of all, it says kill everybody, destroy everybody. And the most important thing, why did they do that? So then you don't associate themselves, because they have some terrible habits. And I don't want you to pick on their habits, God says to them. And what do? They become so entangled with them that you cannot tell the difference who's a Canaanite and who's a Jew. And if you read, you know, those books in the Old Testament, you will see that God was so mad with them because they ended up becoming just like the Canaanites, instead of being separate, aside, holy for God. So the second point is, as we go on this journey, it's very important to be aware and not allow ourselves to be intermingled to such extent with the people of the land, with the worldly people, with the people that are not children of God, right? So in the book of Ezra, I mentioned on this a little bit about Ezra and what happened at the time. Ezra was at the time when it was right at the end when the people of God were coming out of captivity. They were going back to their land. But Ezra, in chapter 9, verse 1, says, then the leaders came to me, saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the people of the land. For they have taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves and their sons, so that the Holy Seed is mixed with the people of those lands. And then Ezra says, when I heard this, I tore my garments and my robe and plucked out some of my hair on my head and my beard and sat down astonished. Again, if you think about who is Ezra, Ezra was a giant of faith at the time. It was their spiritual leader. It was who God appointed, who God chose to really perform this spiritual awakening and bring them back to focus back on God. I like one passage in Ezra chapter 11 where it says that Ezra the priest, the scribe, he was an expert in the words of the commandments of the Lord and in the statutes of Israel. So you see, he was having such knowledge. To an average Jew, marrying people of the land, it was no big deal, right? But to him, because he knew the law, He was finding it appalling that people would intermix with the nations, especially when God clearly told them, you should not intermarry with the people of the land. You should not mingle with the people of the land to really have such connections with them. Then for later on in Ezra chapter 5, verse 5, 9, later on it says, at the evening sacrifice, I arose from my fasting, and having torn my garments and my robe, I fell on my knees and spread out my hands to the Lord my God and said, oh my God, I am too ashamed and humiliated to lift up my face to you, my God, for our iniquities have risen higher than our heads and our guilt has grown up to heavens. you see the amount of sin that Ezra was seeing. And what was their big sin? It's because God told them, don't marry the people of the land. Don't marry people that don't have the same idea about God than you do. And they had done that. For them, it was no big deal. Now, later we see that they do repent. And you know what happened, right? What are we going to do? How do you fix a problem? Well, you have to put away those wives. Can you imagine? Put away those wives. Put away those... They probably had children together. I mean, how devastating is that? For somebody, you can say, well, would God do that? Really, I'm supposed to put my wife away? And you know, that could happen even in our day and age, to be honest with you, that somebody, you know, you can marry someone that you shouldn't be married to. If you're not, you could be in an adulterous relationship and be married to each other, by the way. And then we have the pattern here, that if that's the case, the expectation is that that person will put away, separate from that relationship, so there will be no adultery. But certainly there was an adulterous relationship or an inappropriate relationship to where they had married, and then we see what happens next, that they actually did have to put away their wives because they had to really draw closer to God and really do what God asked them to do in the first place. For us, however, you may say, well, that was Ezra. That was Old Testament. What about us? As we're going on this journey on earth, well, so Paul here in 2 Corinthians says, O Corinthians, we have spoken openly to you. Our heart is wide open. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted by our own affection. And then he tells them, do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? I have a picture here that I like. It's two, you see the picture, right? And one doesn't really quite, not interested to go anywhere. And you know, it just reminds me of what it is to be yoked together with a person that you shouldn't. I saw other pictures. If you look online, you'll see a donkey yoked together with a camel. And actually it was in the law, in the old law, God told them, you're not supposed to yoke two different animals together. It's just a terrible idea. And it's great that Paul brings that up. Why? I have a picture of a little kid there. Like, what in the world is going on here? And it's true. It makes me think about so many families that I know, that one person is a Christian and the other person is not, and then Sunday morning comes, it's like, okay, what are we doing? And the kid's like, are we going to church or are we not? Because if both are on the same page, it's really easy. Brent and Tamara are very familiar with my life back in Romania, I think more than anybody else, about the challenges that I had with my mother. Because when I was growing up in Romania, when I became a Christian, I was 19. And my mother was so offended that I would just forsake the religion of her ancestors, being a Orthodox in Romania. And she, every single day, there was probably not a day that I was with my parents since 19 when I was, when I became a Christian. Ever since I've gone through, you know, until I moved out, that they would not tell me what a terrible idea it was that I'm a Christian and how horrible it is that I spend time with old people and with looking in the Bible. And it's weird that my parents always like Brent and Tamara, especially Tamara. It's like, I love them, but I hate what they're doing to you because they're turning into somebody that I don't like. And constantly was telling me, don't do that, don't do that. And that had an opposite effect on me, right? And I'm thankful at the end of the day that that happened, for what happened. But the connection I want to make here is that my mother really tried to set me up with somebody local, with a girl that is an Orthodox, all kinds of people. Like, and she was thinking, if I get you connected with an Orthodox girl, you're going to be stuck, right? That was her hook, right, if you say. And of course, I didn't do that. And then when I married Lisa, she was of the same herd. And then she knew that she lost. She knew that it was no turning back from me. But the point that I'm making here is that it is very important as you go on this journey is to make sure that that whoever you yoke with, whether it's your husband, your wife, is that that person is always has like faith and they are on the same page with you. If you don't, your journey on this life is going to be very difficult. So I'm encouraging you, if you're not yoked already, right? If you're yoked already, especially that person is kind of not pulling in the same direction you are, I feel very sorry for you, and maybe your relationship is just fine. But the challenge is that if you are not already yoked, is make sure you yoke with somebody that is ready. Because when that happens, when that other person pulls in the same direction with you, everything becomes so much easier. Everything becomes so much easier. Whether it's in the morning when you go to church with the kids, they already know. We know what you do. And then you become really a very powerful couple. And you become such an example to those around and to your families. Much more different dynamics. So later on in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, it says, what a cord, same context, when it says do not be unequally yoked, later on says, and what a cord has Christ with Belial? If you may wonder who is Belial, Belial is also another word for the devil, and you may say, boy, that's a graphic picture. I'll tell you that the devil actually looks a lot worse than that. Paul says, what part has the believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For you are the temple of the living God. And God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. So the third point, as I'm asking how much more time I got. How much time I've got, Brent?
10-15.
Plenty of time. Okay. I will be aware of the time as we move, and my commitment is that I'm not going to keep you longer than I should. Larissa told me, you know, there was a preacher one time, they only do like 10-minute sermons. That was so wonderful. It's like, oh, I can't promise that. It's okay. So I learned from Brent, okay? No. So third point is that we need to be dead to this world. This is my last point. If I can keep you focused on this one last point, then I will have succeeded this morning. So third point is that we need to be dead to this world. So Jesus said that we ought to take up your cross daily and follow him, okay? So Jesus was saying that I want you dead. I want you dead to this world. That's really what Jesus says. I want you to be so dead to this world that it doesn't attract you anymore. Romans chapter 6 verse 3-6 says, or do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him through baptism into death, that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. We are very familiar with this passage. And then further on in verse 5 and 6, it says, for we have been united together in the likeness of his death. Certainly we shall be in the likeness of his resurrection, knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him, that the body of sin might be done away with, so that we should no longer be enslaved of sin. And my last illustration for the day is that I want you to imagine that we had a corpse, like a dead body, like a young man, you know, just had an accident, it can happen, and then is dead, and then it just lays right here. Imagine that, a dead body in the church building, okay? And then imagine a beautiful woman, not dressed very modestly, just comes and just prances all around him and just kind of very immodestly. You see that in your, imagine that, okay? So then the question is, will a corpse watch her? Say, oh, wait a minute, ooh, that's a nice woman right there. said, no, of course you won't watch her. Why not? Because he's dead, okay? If you're dead, you know, you're not gonna see a, even the woman is beautiful, you're dead. So she has absolutely no appeal to him because he is dead to her allures, right? Can you say that? We can see that before. Now, let's just say you take the same dead man, dead body, you just find just dead, okay? And you take him in the parking lot and you put him in that car. That, by the way, is a picture of Brent's car when he was in Romania. No. But you put him inside that car. Anybody here likes cars? Come on, a few cars. Guys, I know some of you do. So, oh, I can't say that I like that car. That would be a sin. This is okay. No, it's not a sin. Okay, so you take the dead man and you put them inside that car. Okay? So is he impressed? Oh, nice leather. What's the horsepower here? No, he's not gonna care. He's not gonna care. That car does not appeal to him because he's dead to its beauty. You don't care, right? A dead person doesn't care about a fancy car. The same thing, take that dead man and put him there on that beautiful mansion by the sea, and you give him this house. This is your house. And the dead man is just gonna say, whoa, I've always wanna have a house like this. What is the dead man gonna say? Will it make a difference to him? No, because nothing in this world attracts him, impresses him, appeals to him. Why? Because he's dead to this world. And there's a lot we can learn from this, because even though we are not physically dead, spiritually, we should be alive and dead to sin, and then anything that happens in this world, really that's sinful. Not that all of those things are sinful, maybe the lady and so forth, but you understand what I mean. We are to be dead to these allures of this world. This is my last slide, and it's actually from a song by a gospel preacher and a songwriter, Rob Frazier, if you've heard of him. The song, it's called, "He Doesn't Want You Better, He Wants You Deader." Have you ever heard this song before? He doesn't want you better, he wants you deader. And he says, dead people don't mind the pain, don't get offended, don't complain. They're not concerned about personal gain. Does that sound like you or me? The truth is rising from the mist. And the word is this, that when Jesus calls a man, he calls him to come and die. And then he says, he wants you not better, he wants you deader. And that is something that as we go through this journey on this world, every day becomes just a little piece, just a little piece, just a little step. We should focus on ourselves and what can we do to become just a little bit deader, a little bit deader to this world, a little bit more free, a little bit more out of that cage. And for the time that we have this week together, my goal is that by the time we're done together and I'm gone, you will be a little bit deader to this world, as I hope the same thing for me. So that is my message for this morning. We will take now a break and we come back for worship later. Thank you.